Hi, I'm Gabe.
And I'm Kat.
And we're
the Ghouls Next Door, talking about spooky stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We have real life spooky stuff.
Yeah.
You should know. This is episode 150. What? Been around for a while now.
Yeah.
We are the media analysis podcast from a horror lens where we explore the real life, historical, scientific reasons behind our cinematic fears. And this month we are talking about mental health awareness, specifically because that's what this month is. But we're talking about how mental health is being represented in horror.
Yeah. It's not always good. Sometimes it is. Like today. Today was a good movie. It was stressful, but it was a good time. Like, in terms of, it was not offensive, in my opinion. Which sometimes, you know, it happens. You're just like, oh, God. Ooh. This wasn't that. Yeah, it was just like, the whole time. Such anxiety.
Yes.
But it was good.
Lots of anxiety. And, you know, and we'll talk about it in depth in my section, but when we, you know, decided to do, like, mental illness and horror, it was like, oh, no. Yeah. What are we going to get? What are we going to see? And being afraid of the possibilities, because it can get really dark and really sad and depressing and gross. Just awful. And this was not that. And it feels like it plays on that. It plays on what your expectations are. And I appreciated that because I played right into it.
It was very effective.
And was pleasantly surprised. This is, I feel like, one of my, like, new favorite horror films just because of how well it did things.
Yeah, like, I would agree with that. It was, okay, like, because I've had a personal interaction with what we're talking about, I found it extremely stressful. Did I think it was amazing? Yes. Like, other people should watch it. Do I ever want to watch it again? No. No, I do not. But
I don't think
you
need to.
Yeah. It's nothing to do with, like, if it was good or not, though, I guess. So it's like, I totally vibe with what you're saying, but I don't think I could make it my favorite movie just because, like, I feel like my favorite movie is one that I would want to watch more than once.
Like, over and over again. Yeah. I think it's just more of, like, a top favorite of Ghouls, just in that.
Yeah.
It's doing a good job.
I agree with that.
Like, we really love It Follows, but I don't think I would watch It Follows, like, a bunch.
That's true. Good point. This is why we talk about things. This is why we have a show. So we can remember.
Where we talk.
Yeah. Words.
Exactly. It's funny, the horror films that you do rewatch, because I'd say one of the horror films I always rewatched growing up was House of Wax.
Oh, yeah.
With Paris Hilton.
Yep, I've seen that one a few times. And it's because it's like,
a million times.
It's scary yet silly.
Yeah, it's, like, dumb scary.
Yeah.
Or, like, Final Destination. Like, I've watched Final Destination. Like, anytime it was on TV, I was like, oh, I gotta watch Final Destination 2 for the 100th time.
Yeah.
And be afraid of, you know, log trucks.
You know, I remember there was one with a nail gun, and it's just, like, I was like, I never want a nail gun. That also comes into play in this movie.
Yeah.
But, my God, I was like, oh, wow, nail guns are really scary. I feel like no one should be allowed to own them. I see the effectiveness.
Maybe have to pass a background check. Yeah. You should have to do that with real guns. For bulls. Yeah, for sure. then we're going to have a little time. I really, really appreciated this film. Which we're talking about is They Look Like People. So if you were like, what?
Yeah, what is
what
this?
What are they turning on about? Cool. And if you are on a listening device, please remember to like and subscribe.
Yes, please.
It helps us. Leave us a review, which actually reminds me, for a brief pause, because I wanted to highlight that we did get a review from a listener, and it made our day, and so I wanted to highlight it because it was so nice. So we got a review from an Apple Podcast user, and I don't know how to spell that, as pronounce your name. Sachney? K, from the United States of America, which is nice, in late April, reviewed us, said, such a terrific show. So far, I've listened to 49 episodes, and from what I can tell, I have 100 more to go. The show is a real find. In a sea of podcasts, Ghouls Next Door is among the very best. Thank you. No, thank you. thank you.
Yeah, that's so nice.
And you do. Now you have 101, unless you listen to 50 since then. Because we have so many. And if you've listened to the first 49 episodes, then you're in for like a treat, because it gets good.
It gets so much better than it did at the beginning. Like, oh, yeah. God.
I feel like just then.
But also it's like, which ones? Which 49? Because like maybe they started like mid and then they're going backwards and then they're just mm-hmm. going to be sad.
Or they started recent and they're going, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's fine.
Our early ones were just us laughing and really enjoying each other, which is fun for some, for us, for some people.
We still do it. We yeah. still enjoy each other.
But it was a lot less but like we're serious. Also serious.
Yes, good, which brings us to the topic of
at hand
the film, which is very serious and stressful as horror can be. So let me tell you about this film. It is called They Look Like People, and is from 2015, directed and written by Perry Blackshear. And thanks to IMDb for this description. Suspecting that people around him are turning into evil creatures, a troubled man questions whether to protect his only friend from an impending war or from himself. Which is like the classic trope of what you're doing in horror, and that like you're the villain, right? Yeah, I just want to say like a big sigh of relief needed after watching this film, because I was so stressed.
Yeah.
And I am so thankful for the portrayal of mental illness in this film. We've mentioned, you know, before that horror can be pretty gross and unkind to in representing folks with mental illness, and usually is villainizing or, you know, diagnosing them with some vague diagnosis, which is one of the reasons I greatly dislike High Tension for the flimsy mental illness explanation in the end. That honestly just felt like they were saying that being lesbian is enough to be a murderer, which isn't
yeah.
true. And that's not how those things work. And we haven't talked about it here, I don't think, but Split, M. Night Shyamalan's Split, got some harsh reviews for its portrayal of DID, dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah.
Which is a disorder I've always been kind of fascinated with. I watch a lot of things. Next week, we're going to be talking about Hereditary, and totally blanking on her name, and someone's yelling at me now. It's so aggravating. but she was in United States of Terror, which is where she had dissociative identity disorder, and it was fun, and I'm sure if I rewatched it, I would be like, not great, but okay. But there were some things that I enjoyed about it. But yeah, so that's like, Split has some bad reviews for it, and that's not necessarily horror, but it has, I mean, he kidnaps children, so that was horrific.
Yeah.
And I totally get the anger for that portrayal. I thought it was like fun, but it's also like not fun to portray
people's
illnesses like that. Yeah, and you can hear us rant about Midsommar's poor representation of mental illness in our mental illness representation episode, and a bit in our Midsommar episode, because we're like, we're not letting you off the hook about this.
Yeah.
And Kat has also talked at length about how in reality it is often people with mental illnesses that are at risk of being harmed by others or themselves than they are to harm other people.
Yeah.
I think that's not really what's going on. And I think there are some really truly horrifying moments in this film, and like tension, where I was really worried that they would turn our protagonist into a villain or instill fear into the audience towards people with schizophrenia or other mental illnesses that feature psychoses and delusions. And I am elated to say that this film does not do that. So here there'll be spoilers in this land. I am not going to say the ending, just to say that I appreciated the ending. So just because I really, really want everyone to watch this film. It is, you know, you can watch it for free on YouTube or on Tubi.
Oh, wow, yeah. I feel like we watched it for free. That checks out.
Yeah, we did. We didn't pay for it. I would, though. I would. But you can't. It's not behind a paywall, so you should watch it. What I appreciate, one of the things I appreciate about this film, and it's similar to, like, Undone. Like, in Undone, we really appreciated the sister character.
Yeah.
And how she, you know, would kind of meet Alma where she was at and was just like, you're being out of control, but I understand we got to do something about it. And even her boyfriend, Sam, he also tried in certain ways to kind of go with her and just be like, okay, you're going to do this anyway, so I'm just going to be here to support you. So you don't hurt yourself and so that you feel safe. And so this film features a really authentic friendship. Like, it was awkward and intimate and really honest. The director, Perry Blackshear, has even heard it referred to as a psychological bromance film, which I thought was perfect. Yeah. Someone kind of referred it to that, and he was like, yeah, sure. So it follows a pair of friends, Wyatt and Christian. Wyatt is the one who's suffering from these psychoses, and Christian is his friend. And because we're seeing it from, we get to kind of see both viewpoints surrounding this mental break. Like, we get to see the friend and what he's experiencing, and we get to see Wyatt firsthand experiencing it. So whenever we're spending time with Wyatt, we get to see his delusions and psychoses firsthand, and that's kind of where the horror comes from, because we hear the awful insect-like buzzing that preludes the arrival of beings that look like people, right? It's like a really creepy buzz sound. I'm going to actually play a clip. Having just, you know, sound designed a bug-related horror story, I'm like, no. We also get to feel the suffocating darkness that, like, skews the faces of the ones that we're supposed to care about.
Yeah.
Like, they're in the dark, and there's, like, a really, I don't have it here, but there's, like, a creepy part where it's just, like, you hear, like, cracking sounds, and then her, someone, like, the shadow of someone seems to get longer than it should be. Yeah. You're like, no. So you get to, like, that's where the horror comes from, is that you're directly experiencing or seeing the world through Wyatt's eyes. And also you're listening to that because, like I said, you have the buzzing. And we also listen to the phone calls from this mysterious voice that is encouraging us and inviting us to believe because we're special. We're the chosen one, and we've been tasked with protecting mankind. We're one of the few people who can do that.
Yeah.
So we see Wyatt waver in this reality. There's that conversation with his therapist that may or may not have happened, because who has therapy sessions in the middle of nowhere and overlooking a lake? That was weird.
Yeah.
But he kind of brushes off his symptoms, and he says, like, I don't think I have schizophrenia. I researched it and it doesn't fit. And then he follows that up with, you know, finally sharing his delusions that he isn't 100% certain he should believe, but he's also like, but what if it is real and I'm the only one who could do this? So it feels very real in that, like, similar to Undone, where she was like, that sounds wild, but the alternative is that I'm crazy. And so, you know, I'm going to believe it. With this, it's like the alternative is, you know, that it is real and I'm ignoring it. And then bad things happen.
Yeah. And potentially putting people I care about at risk because I'm not taking charge of this situation that has been told to me is something that will put, like, humanity at whole in great danger.
Mm-hmm. And like, you know, you're getting is, like, you get this kind of superhero story. Like, what if you are the chosen one? Like, we read and watch films that revolve around a chosen one. Like, we just did a whole series on anime, which is like, that's the whole thing, is that it's like, you're the chosen one. You have the special power to be able to see or do a thing, and now you are tasked with being able to do that. And, like, if you were to experience that, wouldn't you want to believe that you're chosen and special? And wouldn't it be scary to think that you might neglect it and then something bad would happen? Like, it is, there's a lot going in there, and I appreciated that. They're in an interview with Scream Magazine titled "They Look Like People," an interview with Perry Blackshear, which is a horror entertainment magazine. He talks about the dichotomous relationship between knowing something may be real, but preparing for it anyway, just in case. So Perry says, I took a lot of inspiration from the movie Take Shelter, which is a wonderful film. He goes and gets checked out at a psychiatrist's office with his daughter, I believe, because he knows that he might be in trouble. But then at the same time, on the way back home, he goes and buys canned goods for his bunker. And he says, it is those simultaneously knowing that he might be crazy, but still doing the things he has to, because it, what if it was not? I thought that was so complicated and confusing, which is true. And in this, it's like that. Like, he very much is like, I know this might not sound good, and people might not believe it, but what if I am really the only one who's tasked with this? And it feels real to me, which is very vulnerable and nice. Something I found interesting about this film that really adds to it is that it feels very voyeuristic. So it's not an outright found footage film, but there's like this lack of non-diegetic music, and there's no like odd camera techniques to give the viewer like a deeper understanding of the events. It's just like, this is what you get, you see what you get. Right. We're just kind of watching events unfold, and they're awkward and they're honest. Audio plays a really important role in livening it up. It was one of the first things I noticed when watching was that there was no music to like push me forward or tell me what to feel, which is a big part, a big component of horror. Like, we've talked about that before in our horror movie music scores with Sergio, was that it activates things in you to feel certain things and like adds and compounds to the feelings that you have. But instead with this, you don't have music to tell you. Instead, you just sit there and you dwell in the moments alongside the characters, and you just feel your own feelings. We spend time with Christian while he's listening to his motivational ASMR recordings, mm-hmm. and they're like his crutch. We even have this like uncomfortable yet charming like crispy whisper conversation between him and his boss slash crush Mara. So he really is sensitive to sound, and it is a point of like power for him or comfort for him. On the mm-hmm. other side, we have Wyatt, who's experiencing the buzzing and the whispers that indicate uncertainty, fear, and impending danger. So it's like, sound, oh my god, what do we
like, which one do we trust, which one is...
Yeah, and both of them are related to some complicated mental illness. Like, both of them are kind of experiencing the sound specifically related to what they're going through. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, no one is free of trauma in mm-hmm. this. I think the friendship is really the best part of this film, because we get to see the care and compassion between the two characters, like how easily Christian rearranges his life to make room for a friend that he has not seen in a long time or talked to. Like, Wyatt just walks into him like on the street and is like, oh, I'm hanging out, I'm staying at a friend's house. But he wasn't staying at a friend's house. But he still knew within, like, even though he hadn't seen this friend in so long, that if he showed up, that Christian would open the door for him. And he did. And he works really hard, like diligently, to ensure that Wyatt feels comfortable and included and not like a burden, mm-hmm. which is a relief. Like, he even invites him on a date his date, so that he wouldn't be alone, and like makes Mara like invite her friend, who was like the worst. Yeah. But you know, and he like made up a lie because he doesn't want him to feel like he's imposing. And I also think like in that they face similar life challenges, like they're both separated from their fiancés. They're working at jobs that don't bring them joy. Wyatt is no longer there, but he had a job that way.
Yeah.
And they're navigating this complex relationship between themselves and their mental health. And whenever Wyatt explains what's happening or hints at his own uncertainty reality, Christian takes it kind of well, in that he digests and processes the information, not jumping to conclusions or lashing out. Like, he's not like, what are you saying? He doesn't freak out. Like, even when it was really intense and, like, anyone else would be like, oh, no. Like, even smaller reasons than the biggest part when that happens. There are times when, like, a normal person might be like, no. Or, like, an outsider be like, you crossed a line, you know. But he's like, no. Let's do this together. And, like, he never tells Wyatt he's crazy. He's never like, you're crazy. I'm not going to give you a diagnosis, you know? And when he looks to get him help, he offers his own experiences with instability as a reason to explain his understanding and why he should be trusted. Because Christian is also going through things. Like, his fiance left him, and he had been expecting to be a father and was working to be this perfect, like, father figure. He's incredibly obsessed with what it means to be masculine. Like, he puts a lot onto being, like, a man and what is expected of a man, and he needs constant petting via that ASMR tape that, like, motivates him to continue. Like, he's doing it. He admits that he had attempted suicide, and that led to him seeking help. And so his approach to Wyatt is really the most beautiful part of this film, and I was really thankful for it. Because, like, it could have been an entirely different story if it wasn't someone who cared so much for Wyatt.
Yeah.
Just honestly. So, as we mentioned, we have two questions that I am going to explore in this series. So one is, does it appropriately represent the horrors of a mental illness? And does it inspire empathy and compassion towards an individual with mental illness? And so in that same interview with Scream Magazine, director Perry Blackshear talks about his inspiration for the film in that he did his research. And so I really, like, appreciated that. So he says, I did a lot of research into schizophrenia after being inspired by this video about a virtual reality simulator that you could put on and feel what it would be like to be schizophrenic. I saw it when I was younger, and it was the scariest thing by far that I have ever seen. The fact that you could never know when it would be on or off. The waking nightmare parts of it was so frightening. And the more research I did, the more people went through, was more scary than anything I could ever come up with. Which is true. And I think I remember, Kat, you talking about, like, one of your workshops, like, that you had to take for...
Yes.
And that mental they health. Were, like, whispering in your ear.
Mental health first aid. So I worked for the Philadelphia School District for a significant amount of my adult life, I would say. And one of the trainings that we did, which would be really helpful for somebody who has never experienced any kind of mental health issue, but they did not preface that this is what they would be doing, in that they're trying to simulate what it's like to deal with a mental illness and listen to what's being said to you. So they had someone who would whisper in your ear, like, with a cone, essentially, like a paper cone, and then a person who would be trying to tell you instructions. It was a very uncomfortable and triggering, honestly, thing to have someone, like, to experience both.
Yeah, you should always have, you know, trigger warnings for those things. I don't know if there were trigger warnings for this film, but I mean, you kind of know going in that it's going to be scary in that way. But yeah, I think there is something, like, there's a game, blanking on the name that I told you before, where the character has, like, hallucinations, and some of them are auditory, and so she's, like, losing the she's losing the thread, and you as a player have to navigate, like, hearing all that and dealing with those hallucinations and also trying to fight through and win this game. And I thought that was really great. It's interesting that, like, that's one of the benefits of virtual reality, which we also covered in a previous episode, that it can provoke empathy because it's literally putting you into, like, the shoes, like, you know, like, it's putting you into that place where you have to experience what someone else might be, and maybe you will better understand it. So it, I would say, does appropriately, as far as I know, it is appropriately representing what he has perceived is the experience, in it, and what Kat will talk about psychosis and certain delusions, is that in similar to Undone, we have a protagonist who is told that they are chosen, special, and given a monumental task, right? For Alma, it was that she's no longer bound by time and space, and so she can navigate however she wants and prevent her father's death, and ultimately kind of get to the bottom of his demise. For Wyatt, he is informed that there is an alien race that has been infecting and possessing people since the beginning of time. Like, they mention old times. And it's with the intention of, like, taking over, and they want to start a war. And so he's one of the few warriors who can save the people that he loves. And so I think Wyatt has a little more understanding and reluctance to believe it, but also, like, he doesn't feel like he really has a choice. Whereas Alma kind of did have a choice in some way. Like, she still was going to believe it. And it was, you know, if you could save your father, like, of course you would believe that you could. I think the biggest plus to this film is that it does a wonderful job of subverting our expectations that are instilled in us from the horror genre. And using those expectations to build on the tension. Like, in any other horror film, Wyatt would be the monster that we're forced to sympathize with, not the victim we should care for, right? Like, he would just be, we would be like, oh, we get where he's coming from, but he's the monster, right? And there's a particularly stressful scene that finds Wyatt on the roof of Christian's apartment complex, and he is equipped with a nail gun. And after having gathered, like, a plethora of tools, like, questionable tools and gadgets from, like, eBay or something, but he's up there in an attempt to prepare for the war. So he was, like, playing with the nail gun, so we know it's powerful. And it's unsettling enough seeing that. But then knowing that he might use this for violence against innocent people that he is perceiving to be the villains. Like, because the whole time you know that he has been seeing people as the bad versions of them, like, it's going out so far as to, like, leave his fiance because he thinks they got to her. And when he's on the roof, we hear the buzzing, which means that one of them is near, and he looks down and he sees a couple and, like, random people walking along, and the buzzing is there, and it's like looming and suffocating. And he takes aim, and when I was watching, my body just tensed because I was like, here it is. You know, I'm expecting the worst. This gruesome, like, turn that we often see in horror. The moment that, like, our villain realizes that it's actually not that hard to take a life, right? That they were chosen and that this is the war. Like, I have seen this story play out many a time where they feel validated. Like, oh, okay, killing is the answer. Which would leave us with a film that's just old as cinematic time. With a mentally ill villain. Like, that's just horror 101. But Wyatt does not shoot the people below. And it was, like, a sigh of relief and absolutely, like, appreciation for not doing it. Because I really can't explain how worried I was the entire film. Like, I was on the edge of my seat. Because I was just waiting for that sickening message, the lesson to be learned being that you can't trust someone who's having a mental break. Because it really plays in that. It was like, would you believe this person? And each time the film surprised me because it would avoid it completely. Instead, it was playing on those exact fears and expectations so that I would feel that tension. Whereas if I feel like if you hadn't watched or you weren't expecting what society has been telling us this whole time, you might not feel the same fear because you'd be like, of course he's going to be fine. Like, if this was a superhero film, you'd be like, of course he's right and he's going to save the world. There is a time where we see Wyatt vulnerable and kind of losing the thread there too. And this very long, excruciatingly long and quiet scene, he aims the nail gun at his own head. And for that, it was like a representation of the actual real life threat that those with mental illness and schizophrenia face, which is honestly just suicide. According to a study by the National Center for Biotechnology Information, apparently up to 40% of the premature deaths of those with schizophrenia could be attributed to suicide, and that experiencing auditory or visual hallucinations increase that risk substantially. That's the real thing that people should be afraid of, like, more so than him being on the roof threatening other people's lives. When he was threatening his own, that's when it was like, whew. Like, I was really like,
yeah,
I trusted Wyatt to a degree. Like, he's a sweet boy, like, honestly. And so I felt very strongly that, like, there's, like, he really has to hit this breaking point. Cause up until now, he's been having these hallucinations. He has believed that there's something out there and still refused to do anything and hurt anyone. And so I, like, even though I was tensed, it was mostly like I was tensed to be like, don't make that the narrative. It wasn't so much believing you why I could he do was it, gonna but when do he, it.
Yeah,
with the nail gun in his own, like, that was really stressful for both of us. When I just remember us really freaking out for that part, because it was like, oh god, like, even though, and that's like conversely, because for a film, it's like, you're not going to kill off our protagonist this way, but it was still more scary than it would be if it, you know, like, then the rooftop in that way.
Yeah.
And to kind of get away from that depressing thing, I really can't get over this friendship, which I think is the strength of the film. There is quite a few scenes with Christian that really touched me as a viewer and someone, like, you know, based on what we were talking about last week about being an ally. And I feel like Christian was a pretty decent ally. I'm sure there are things that could be improved, but I appreciated his approach. And, like, we have a scene where Christian explains that he used to have nightmares and he, like, describes the monster in it. And so then he asks Wyatt, like, what is your version of those monsters that are haunting you, right? And he's really delicate and patient with Wyatt. And when the war is fastly approaching and through a stressful interaction with Mara, Christian's love interest, Wyatt is pushed further along into his delusion, and in his panic, he finally admits to Christian that he's been, what he's been keeping to himself, and he insists he's not crazy, and that this is serious, and Christian never calls him crazy, and he's like, let's calm down, like, he's very cautious and visibly worried, but he's never like, you're wrong, this is messed up, get out of my house. He's like, is everyone safe? Have, like, make sure you haven't done anything that you regret, and let's calm, let's do this, like, tell me what it is. And later he has this scene and he has this line that I really appreciated, that I will play for you.
I don't believe what you believe, but I know you believe it, so just be honest with me, and you have to promise me not to kill anyone, okay?
So, which is, it's, that's such a Christian answer. He laughed about a lot of things. But it really was like, you know, I that does sound not real to me, but it, I know it's very real to you. So I'm going to let you believe it. Or I'm going to tell me what it is so we can figure it out and make sure you don't hurt anyone. When he signs him up for a therapy session after disclosing his own struggles, he even goes as far as to equip himself for the anticipated war, being very firm, like, you know, we're not going to harm anyone, but he's like, okay, the war is coming that you told me about, so let's do it.
Like, let's prepare, like, we're gonna... let's make sure you feel safe so that we can get through this together
safely, like, and we're not going to hurt anyone. You can be a passive person in the war. And so, like I said, I won't spoil the ending, only say that Black Shear's subverting of horror tropes is phenomenal. He does a really great job. And the messages between Kat and I towards the end were just a bunch of just like, oh god, oh no, please don't, this can't be, and just like a lot of like just like, oh please, no, no, no. So you should you absolutely should watch this film. And I sat in silence for quite a while the credits rolled, just sitting in my feelings and confronting my own biases that are ingrained in me from simply being a horror fan. Like, I was like, wow, I was really not expecting it to do this, which is another reason why I think it's, like, at the top for me, because I was like, thank you for, you know, using that to turn me around. And it was also really scary. Like, experiencing Wyatt's hallucinations, like I said, were stressful. And the idea that you can't trust those in front of you, which makes, you know, seeking help that much more challenging. And Christian has, like, another line towards the end, which I will play as well, that was just, it was very vulnerable, and it was great.
Because, yes, it's really scary to trust you right now, but that's what this is, so trust me, because I trust you.
That's so sweet. Best friendship. Romance. Yes. Yeah, I felt like it was a very delicate moment that I feel like we need to keep in mind when we're helping someone manage their own hallucinations and delusions, is, like, that we should trust the best in people, that they mean well, and that whatever it is that they're going through, like, we need to offer compassion for that and, you know, meet them where they're at and not make them out to be a villain or a victim even, and just be like, okay, let's get through this. Tell me what it is that you're seeing and experiencing, and let's work through it. And trust them, like, trust that they're good people, and that just because you, like, as much as horror would want you to believe, having a mental illness does not make you a villain or that much closer to being a villain. I think if anything, it's just like, if you have like narcissism or if you're like a sociopath or something, like, those are serial killers. They all have those, like, narcissism where they thought they were better than people, God complexes, but not, you know, the ones that they're always trying to, they're like, you got bipolar disorder? That means bam. Like, no, that's not.
Yeah. That's not how it works.
So thank you, like, Perry Blackshear, for such a great film. It's super scary, but brutal and honest, and I appreciated it.
Yeah, it was one of the best slash also stressful films I've ever watched, because I will start my flack section very honest that I did not I do not have a mental illness that has psychosis as a symptom, but I do have a very close loved one who has experienced psychosis, and I have been in the shoes of Christian before, and it is very scary, and it was very traumatic, and for me and for them, but it is, I was so thrilled by this film's portrayal of it, in that, like, just like Gabe, I was so scared that they were just going to make this another instance of this person has a mental illness, so they are a murderer, and we're just going to let that rock, and we're going to make you feel sad about it, but, like, that is what it is. And it was just really great to not have another example of it, because there are so many, and it does create, even outside of horror, just in media and TV, it instills this bias and stigma that people who have these mental illnesses just have to deal with every day. And, like, that is, like, the biggest thing in terms of functioning within society, is that there's lots of instances where society has made it that is, like, a deal breaker for any sort of happy life. And it was really cool to see a film that makes it that, like, you can survive and have people who care about you and love you and, like, want to be there for you through this, and that, like, you're going to get through it with somebody. You're not going to just be by yourself and have to just, like, and I also thought it was really interesting and nice that hospitalization was not what we ended up seeing, or, like, that was the only route towards dealing with this, because that is something that does happen to people. That is what happened to my loved one, but it's not universal. Like, not everyone ends up in a hospital. So I thought that was cool that they showed that there's different ways.
Our mental hospitals, at least in America, have a very torrid history of not actually helping, and in fact hindering or using them as experiments. So
yeah.
It's I understand not wanting to trust or believe that, you know, like, it's valid to be wary.
Yeah. But I guess for the fact section, I will give a little context to what we're seeing in the film. So one of our first questions is, what is psychosis? And the definition that we have of psychosis from the National Association of Mental Illness is, psychosis is characterized as disruptions to a person's thoughts and perceptions that make it difficult for them to realize what is real and what isn't. These disruptions are often experienced as in seeing, hearing, or believing things that aren't real, or having strange, persistent thoughts, behaviors, and emotions. While everyone's experience is different, most people say psychosis is frightening and confusing. Most people think that psychosis is a break with reality in a way that it is, but psychosis is a symptom, not an illness. It is more common that you think, and in the U.S., approximately 100,000 young people experience psychosis each year. As many as 3 in 100 people have an episode at some point in their lives. While I've not, it's a higher number than I think a lot of people realize. And while I haven't experienced having psychosis firsthand, I have experienced a loved one go through psychosis as a symptom of an overarching mental illness, specifically bipolar 1. This experience wasn't unique to us. It's not to reflect the experience of others, as everyone has the capacity to experience things differently. And as we spoke in our last episode, it is largely impacted by culture, by the society that you live in, how it is going to influence like kind of what the delusion or psychosis manifests itself as. While this experience was an extremely traumatic one for me, it was also extremely traumatic for them. And it was horrific. So out of respect to this person, I will keep their identity anonymous, but with their permission, they have offered some of their firsthand perspective to what it is like to experience a psychotic break and like some advice to someone who, if they have not heard this before, it can kind of help keep you safe in the instance that you start to experience a psychotic break. So our second question are, what are some of the things someone with psychosis encounters? There is, again, from the National Association for Mental Illness, psychosis includes a range of symptoms, typically that involve one or two major experiences. The first one is hallucinations, seeing, hearing, or feeling things that aren't there, such as hearing voices, strange sensations or unexplainable feelings, seeing glimpses of objects or people that are not there or that are distorted. Basically believing external forces are controlling thoughts, feelings, behaviors, believing that trivial remarks, events, or objects aren't just coincidences, but have personal meaning and are significant. And sometimes this can mean that you think you have special powers, you're on a special mission, or even that you are God. A Reddit post that I got, Redditors who experience psychosis, what do you do when you feel it coming on? A Redditor with the name Black Jesus said, in short, there isn't a great deal that you can do. If you're in a public situation, the best thing you can do is isolate yourself or ride it out. If people experience it more seriously than me, I imagine that there is an issue, but that is what works for them. In this Reddit thread, a commonly spoke upon thing is feeling out of body or watching yourself do things, but not being in control. My loved one confirmed that this is similar to how they felt and described it as if they were the main character in a movie. This was a major shift into the period of psychosis, specifically where they were living. Music constantly played over the light speakers on the main street, which made them think like that kind of continued the feeling that they were in a movie and that it sounded like the soundtrack playing for their movie. And I think there's like things that you don't consider on your day to day that could further influence someone who's going through psychosis. And that was one that, like, I think generally people wouldn't think that that would like have an impact. Just like, it's nice that music's playing, but that is something that like did contribute.
Being there and hearing that music, because we visited that place and I was like, this is like a video game, or like, it was creepy. It was like, I feel like I'm in Pleasantville or something.
It's uncomfortable for sure. And it's something that they didn't say like caused it by any means, but like it was something that they vividly remember contributing to like this feeling that they weren't in something real. Basically, the time frame with which this happened can be really different for different people. For my loved one, this lasted about 2 to 3 months. That escalated over a period of time. So at this point, they had become a year sober. They were not diagnosed with anything. They had never had any kind of psychotic episode, and they were 42 years old. So generally, I feel like lots of people manifest this, like if they have an illness, a mental illness, they've realized this sooner. But because of the specific situation, like they had already lived for 42 years and had not experienced anything like that. I'm not going to go into detail over exactly what happened, but at the beginning, I acted very similarly to the friend Christian in They Look Like People, and I really tried as hard as I could just to make sure that like they were safe. And I will say, like at the beginning, it was very much something bad was happening. They needed protection. They needed help. And then it escalated to more of a happy that it was not so much she thought she was in danger, but it was more so that they thought, like, something wonderful was happening. And that was an interesting transition, because I feel like in the they look like people, there it seemed very much like the horror end of it. And it started very horrific, got to a place where things were like really positive, and then kind of took another shift in the opposite direction. During this time, my loved one said a few different things happened and can help influence lack of sleep, not eating, kind of staying up for days at a time is something that is not good for someone who has a mental illness, especially if you're not taking care of yourself, you're spending a lot of time outside. That largely influenced the like escalation of the psychotic break. There were two instances of hospitalization that took place, one instance with police interaction and a lot of high stress encounters, but luckily the police interaction was not negative in this instance. They said the hospitalization period was one of the most traumatic for them, and while it was necessary to find a diagnosis, it was described as, in her entire 42 years of existing, the most traumatic thing she's ever experienced, and that was at a good hospital. She commented on the fact that it was a good hospital, and even still, it was one of the most horrific things she's ever experienced, in that, you know, the people who were there are not well, and there's lots of sound. Usually the use of force is used to distribute medication. And it was very traumatic. A lot of what she told me about was that the system itself is very flawed, and that if anything needs to change, it is the system that deals with people who are going through these issues. I asked if there was any advice that they'd give to someone experiencing a psychotic break, and they said if there's someone that you trust to tell that you don't feel okay, that is the thing you should do, if possible, in the early stages of it. They said that once they were fully in the psychosis, they were unable to eat, sleep, take care of themselves. But if you're in the early stages, just try to go to sleep, try to eat something, try to stay inside. And they listed a technique called the five things technique that you can use to get out of a panic attack. They said that that is also very useful, if you're starting to question your reality, is to focus on five things and kind of have them ground yourself in your body, in your space, and make you feel safe. And if you have someone that you trust, to tell that person to be with you if they can, and take you to place somewhere safe where you can calm down, get through it. If that's a hospital, okay. If it's not, just being with that person can be the thing that keeps that person alive. How do you manage psychosis after you've gotten a diagnosis and you've experienced it before? This is not universal for everybody, as psychosis is a symptom, not a like an illness itself. So it can be associated with different things. In the film, we have it suggested it might be schizophrenia. For my loved one, it was bipolar 1. There are other instances where you can trigger psychosis, either through drugs or, I think there are other illnesses that do have psychosis as a possible symptom. But the handling of it kind of in terms of the medical end is different for everybody. Some require medication, some require therapy, some require different severities of intervention. My loved one manages psychosis with medication for bipolar 1, medical marijuana. Meditation was something big that they talked about, and sticking to a sleep and eating schedule. So if you do experience that and you do not have any of those things in play, that is something they recommend to take into your own hands. The biggest piece of healing that they said in living with psychosis as a symptom is forgiving yourself for what happened during that episode of psychosis. And while the people around you might ask for some level of accountability, you can still do that with forgiving yourself and understanding that what happens during that time isn't you all the time. And finding humor in some of the situations is something that also helped them, in acknowledging the trauma for what it was. They also stress that being an advocate for yourself is essential and is super important, and educating yourself on your diagnosis instead of, like, if you get a diagnosis, trusting your medical professionals or therapists is a thing, but the best thing to do is really educate yourself on what that diagnosis is, the treatment options available, because usually there are medications that trigger things like pseudo-Parkinson's, which just makes you shake, and other things that can be really debilitating and aren't caused by the illness, mental illness itself, but are caused by the medications that are used to treat it. So for people who feel like they need to be medicated, there are different kinds of medications, different dosages that, unfortunately, because the system is so flawed, they said is very much something you have to advocate for yourself or have loved ones that you care about advocate for. But they said one of the hardest things on it are the system or the stigma, the system in place, and a lot of misunderstandings and misrepresentations of people with mental illness. That they have to actively advocate against. And they said the hardest part of having psychosis as a symptom is having a hard time trusting themselves and actively questioning their sanity, emotions, and questioning out whether or not their happiness in, like, moments where they feel really happy is real or something that they need to, like, call me about and tell that, like, they might be experiencing the beginning of an episode. And, like, just not trusting themselves is really difficult. And, and honestly, feeling like people around them might not trust them if they know, because of the stigmas in place, that it could be used as ammunition to gaslight them or tell them that they're crazy when they're not being. And that's something that happens pretty commonly. But basically, the biggest advice that they give is you got to do whatever you can do to be okay. And surround yourself with people that you trust and love you and have your best interest in mind and at heart. Because I feel like a lot of times the people who experience the worst version of this are people who don't have people around them that can help them through it. And people are trash. There's lots of people who do not handle that situation like Christian did. And that's something we see a lot in media and honestly just in the world. So some advice that they gave was to not waste your energy on people who are not going to give you that kind of trust and love.
Proper care.
Yeah. Like people who are going to gaslight you or make you feel like your illness is a facet of every interaction you have with other people. Because it's not. There's instances where people will say, like, you're being crazy, where you're not being crazy. And when you already have trouble trusting yourself, that can be really challenging. Because if the person's supposed to love and care about you, they shouldn't be basically skewing and being, like, sus, essentially, in helping you through that process. I think of, like, in Undone, specifically the instance where the boyfriend was being the worst, where he, like, moved the pictures and said, I didn't do that.
Lied to her.
Yeah. And was, like, basically gaslighting her. And she's like, I'm questioning my reality. I need you to tell me if you do something, not because I'm, like, going to get mad at you, because I need to know what is real and what isn't. And yeah, that's, like, a challenging piece of it. But obviously, like, that is just our experience with it. That is not universal for everybody. But that's, like, the advice that they said I should give on their behalf.
That's so nice. Well, yeah. Thank them.
I will.
Profusely for offering up their experiences. Because, you know, we really appreciate it. Because, like we said, it's, like, we want people to be able to tell the stories that are theirs. And it changes things. It transforms things drastically when that happens. Or when you just do it out of care and understanding, as opposed to, like, as a tool, as, like, a weapon in the media, which happens a lot. So thank you. And for, you know, our listeners, if you have your own experiences with psychosis or delusions, or you have your own stories that you want to share with us, and totally can be confidential, like, we're not going to blast your information out there, but we, you know, are interested to hear about people's experiences. And if you do watch this film, if you feel any similarities, or if you feel, you know, like, hey, this actually isn't the experience I had at all, and I didn't appreciate it, whatever it is, like, we want to hear that. Also, the actress's name is Toni Collette. I remembered during your full thing circle. And I was about to yell it, and I was like, no, this is a really serious part. You know, you're like opening your heart, and I'm like, Toni Collette. Yeah, who is Toni Collette? Alec. That's nice. So this was great. Again, I love this film. I appreciated your section again, Kat, each time. Like, every time we're covering this new episode for this month, it's like a big challenge to be like, what are you going to say? Because we've already kind of said a good deal. And we also don't want to speak to something that isn't our experience. So it's like, what are we going to say about it? And so, you know, just commend you for your diligence and hard work in gathering.
Thank you.
You know, what you can share, what you feel you have the right to share. Next week, we have some guests from a fellow podcast who covers, you know, mental health often and, you know, speaks to the importance of us powering through and helping each other so that we all stick around and that the world is better for having you in it. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be talking about a Toni Collette film, Hereditary. So make sure that you like and subscribe so you get that notification and you can hear about the one Ari Aster film that we do actually enjoy. Without having to like fight ourselves to appreciate. You know, like to be like, it's good if we don't look at these things. You know, like if I ignore the stuff, we actually did kind of enjoy it. But looking at it from this analytical lens, I don't know if I'll have the same appreciation I did when we first watched it.
That's fair. Yeah. I think this film has really raised the bar in terms of now what I will expect watching horror films. I really hope that there is more positive representation of mental health, because it could be used, as you see in this film, so beautifully, like so effectively, without demonizing the main character that's experiencing it, or like demonizing a side character, because that's something you see a lot too, and that's something that like honestly continues this feeling that like there, that it's such an, that there, it acts like there aren't people who just live with this every single day. And makes it seem like, I don't know, it's just like that it has to be something that they can't tell people because there's such this negative stigma around it that'll make people scared of them. And that's not how anyone should feel. And it's rude. Yeah. It's rude as hell. The genre that we love so much, unfortunately, often does that. And if anything, this is just like cool that we've seen two solid pieces of work, like media, that do a really good job. And here's hoping that there's more.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Because it's also like the reluctance to admit or, you know, get diagnosed because you're afraid that you get the bad guy disease, you know, or like whatever, like that's not real. It also reminds me of like how people react to people who get like AIDS diagnosis. Like that's not a death sentence that it used to be. People live with it and are fine and have partners and live lovely lives. And so it's just like, it's because of, you know, the media and because of the way that it's been portrayed and represented for forever, that we all have these preconceived notions and ideas about these people that we shouldn't, which could, you know, negatively impact how someone is experiencing it even further, like you mentioned last week. That if the society you're in is telling you you're wrong and you're bad, then you think that you're wrong and you're bad and you don't try to live or
it all comes back to capitalism.
It's rude as hell. I think that'll be this whole series is gonna be like us yelling at how people are perceiving it. But again, I appreciate this film. So please, please, please go out and watch it. again, is free. So do it. Gets, you know, get Perry's, his flowers.
It's free. It's for me. So yes. Get out there and watch it.
$3.99. And yep. Let us know what you think. If there is a horror film that you think did a good job of portraying mental illness that maybe we're missing, let us know. We want to hear more.
Yeah.
Because we're always looking for those suggestions. If there's a horror film that you feel like did a really bad job that you want us to roast, you can also let us know that too.
We can back it up with receipts and science.
Yeah, so remember, you can email us at theghoulsnextdoor@gmail.com or follow us on social media. You can find us looking us up, Ghouls Next Door. And with that, don't get married.
They'll eat your kids.
Yeah, so, yeah. I don't have anything to say but that.
Yeah,
so
bye. I feel like it's serious. Bye.